Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is September 7th, 2004. Today's speaker is Sarah Bresnow. Lesson for today is A Personal Story of Protest at the Republican National Convention. Let's listen in.
Here at Holden Village, we have forums, discussions, conversations, occasionally, not regularly, not in any kind of fixed way, but when people who have moved through an experience want to share that, then we think it is appropriate to have a forum. A forum is a time when people can share their stories and their own convictions, and what we want is that we do this in a spirit of respect and civility, that we do not attack one another, but state your own view and your own conviction. And we will move back and forth with that. This will be a one-hour forum, and I will be the timekeeper. So none of you have to worry about that. And 1 hour is a good amount of time for me. And then I think it will be good for you also. Sari Bresnow is going to speak first about her protest experience in New York City at the Republican National Convention. Sari.
Well, it's actually somewhat incidental that I was there. I'm a musician, and I play trumpet, and there was a band that was going, whose trumpet player couldn't go, who invited me to fill in the spot. It's a marching band that goes to various political actions around the world. It's called the Infernal Noise Brigade. And, of course, I didn't plan to speak to you, but I think there's probably a lot of misinformation or just lack of information, and I was there at the protest and I was arrested, and just a lot of people were interested, and rather than tell the story, you know, 200 times, I thought I'd just say it once here. So, to start off with, there was only one permitted event in New York City. There were, you know, tens of thousands of people converging on the city to air their complaints, make their voices heard about their problems with Bush administration policies. The convention started on Monday, went till through Thursday night, which was Bush's speech. Sunday, before the convention even started, was the only event that the city sanctioned for protesters. It was a huge protest. 750,000 people were there. It was an incredible, incredible event. Successful, you know, from I think probably any standard. Apparently, it wasn't covered that. I don't know if people even know that that happened. There were 750,000 people marching in New York. Then, the rest of the week, there was really nowhere, Manhattan being so dense, there's really nowhere for people to gather because the laws in New York are such that you can't block traffic and you also can't block the sidewalk. All you can do is march two abreast, so take up only half of the sidewalk. So when you're several thousand strong, trying to stay in a two abreast line on the sidewalk is very difficult to be organized to that extent. So this band that I was with, there's a whole bunch of different actions going on every day, and we were trying to choose where to go, and on the Tuesday, of the week. We first went to the Shut-Up-A-Thon, it was called, which was outside Fox News Network, where people were gathering and going, Shut-Up-Fox, and we played there, and then, but we played on half of the sidewalk. We have a formation that's very tight. And then when the police started kind of closing things in, we had scouts and people that are doing our logistics for us, and they're like, okay, it's time to get out of here. And so we marched away, and there was several, probably a dozen police officers. There was police on foot, on bike, and motorcycle that went right along next to our band, basically harassing us. And we were just going to get out of that situation and go to a park to take a break and eat lunch. And we're going to the library steps, which is where people congregate all the time, it's a public space. And when we got to the steps, the police wouldn't let us stop. They said, if you stop, we'll arrest you because you're obstructing, you know, because we needed to stop and pull over onto the steps. And they were like, nope, if you stop marching, we're going to arrest you. And then we kept marching. And meanwhile, we're a group of 20, and so there's no way for us to make decisions together while marching, you know, like we're in a long string marching along and trying to figure out what to do, and police wouldn't let us stop walking. And then we went to a park and we said, we asked the police, can we go in this park and sit down? And they said, if you want to get arrested. Mm-hmm. And then we went down to the subway, and it followed us down to the subway but didn't get on the train. Then what happened is there was an action, a street party that was going to be starting in Union Square, which is in the southern part of Manhattan, whereas the Madison Square Garden, where the convention was in Midtown, like about halfway up. And so we knew that the street party action was going to start down there and be heading towards Madison Square Garden, but we also knew that it was really likely they were going to be arrested, so we planned to not actually go to Union Square, but intersect them partway. If they hadn't been arrested, then we would meet them and make our way with them. But because we ended up being chased onto the subway by the police, we took the subway to Union Square, and we were there at the beginning of the street party action. There were two other bands there. It was, you know, thousands of people. And there's a lot of confusion. Our band didn't know whether we were going to do this march or not, because we had no intention of getting arrested, because we had shows to play every night, you know, in various clubs, and, you know, it was always our line that we won't get arrested. And so we stayed away from actions that seemed not very well organized or a little risky. So we were there trying to make a decision, trying to figure out what was happening, and then meanwhile the street party mobilized, organized, and started marching off down the street, and we were like, what's happening, what's going on? And we didn't have time to make a group decision, and we just jumped on to the end of that, and we were like behind them, like, wait for us. And then the group turned down the street right outside the park, and then the police barricaded that end, and then we turned around and the police barricaded this end of the block. And then everybody got on the sidewalk, knowing that the police were going to want to arrest people if they were in the street. So we immediately got on the sidewalk, and the police just condensed, pushed. And then even though we were on the sidewalk, there was no one left in the street. They were like kind of subdividing the group into pockets and just pushing them together and condensing with their batons like this. And my whole band, it was just getting really, really tense. And my whole band, we played like our slowest, most mellow song to try to diffuse energy and encourage people to just chill out and wait for instructions from the police, which there were never any instructions from the police. No order to disperse, which we would have gladly done. And then we're on the sidewalk, then the police in one that were surrounding our little cluster, which is probably about 100 people strong, suddenly do one big move and take like two steps in, and the group gets completely mashed together, and it was really, really scary. There's like absolutely no room, and people are getting crushed. And my friend, who plays the bass drum, was at the very back of the group, against the building. And I turn around and she's screaming and being crushed between her bass drum and the wall. And it's just the police that are doing it. There's nothing violent going on. People are chanting, peaceful protest, violent cops, peaceful protest, violent cops. And the cops are just pushing. And there's just, and everyone raises their instruments, their drums and stuff above their head to try to create more room in there. And it's just, so I've never been so scared. And there's a policeman right in front of me, and I'm sitting there, and please, officer, please, people are being crushed, can you just take a step back? It was just a little bit more room. And he looks and he goes, oh, you'll have plenty of room soon enough. And then they borrow our megaphone, because they didn't bring their own, and say, you're all under arrest, everybody sit down. So we all, and they gave us a little bit more room, and we sat down, and they took people one by one in handcuffs, which are like the zip tie handcuffs, which are supposedly, I've never had the real kind on, but much more uncomfortable than the real handcuffs that are meant for wrists. And put us on a bus. And this whole process takes about 2 hours, just slowly getting people one by one on the bus. Then we get taken to a pen, which they had established specifically for the protests, which was on Pier 57, which was a big warehouse building that, I'm not sure that this is what it was, but I heard that it was like a bus, like a mechanic, a bus depot kind of mechanic, like where they fix and wash up buses there. And there was chain link pens inside there. And after processing us through taking all of our belongings, putting them in plastic bags, and then we had to walk along. So the cuffs have been on for like 3 hours now, with our belongings in plastic bags dragging along. And the same friend with the bass drum has bruises down the entirety of her legs from her bass drum being carried behind her back like that. And we get into the pens, and there's nowhere to sit. And there's no running water. You get a cup, and they take the handcuffs up. You've been separated from your belongings. You're not allowed to have any cell phones or, you know, anything. And there's like there's two porta potties. This is a pen that's probably half the size of this room. And there's probably about 120 women in there. And there's nowhere to sit. And the floor is covered with like a quarter inch of like motor oil and grime. And we proceeded to stay there for the next like 18 hours. And so people are laying down on the ground, and I still have my shirt that hasn't been washed yet because they're collecting samples of clothing because there's a lawsuit about this place happening now. But, you know, they're just completely covered head to toe in this black sort of viscous grime. And every now and then, you know, someone, they come and call a bunch of names and take them, and it seems completely random. You can't tell how they're choosing names. So I was in there for about 18 hours, some folks longer, but actually the men ended up getting processed first because they're at the jail, the main jail, the platoons, where eventually people were going and you're getting processed. There's far fewer facilities for women there. So the women's part was totally backed up, so that they couldn't take any more women there. So we got cuffs, when your name was called, you got cuffs put back on, then you got put in like a police transport, like a paddy wagon kind of thing that has all cages. It's like one of the Holden buses, except it has, you know, metal cages inside, and you get put in a cage. And then you get taken to the jail, and the jail was like pristine compared to what we, you know, it was, there were metal benches, nowhere to sleep or beds or anything like that. For food, we were given two pieces of white bread with one piece of bologna in between, and if, you know, you had a wheat allergy or were vegetarian, at one point there was peanut butter sandwiches that went around, but that was like every 4 hours they'd come around with that. And you just slowly went through this process, which took, for me, I was in 30 hours And I was one of the first ones in our band to get out. The entire band was arrested. Some folks were in for 48 hours. So I initially got arrested Tuesday evening at 6, and I went through the whole process of, you know, being fingerprinted, mugshots, blah, 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 all that. And finally I got out, and I actually got to see a judge, which some people didn't, which meant that I got, and I had three things that were listed against me. I had two violations and a misdemeanor. One was failure to disperse, obstructing traffic, and parading without a permit. Those are the three things that I was in for. And what I ended up with was called an ACD, and I can't remember exactly what that stands for, but it means that I have 6 months, and if I don't get in trouble in the next 6 months, then my case is sealed, which is not exactly the same as dropped, but pretty close. Like, it doesn't really go on your record. But at 5 o'clock on Tuesday, or no, it was like midnight on Tuesday night, right around the time that I was getting out, there was a writ of habeas corpus filed against the police department that was holding everyone, saying that everyone needed to be released by, it was, I think, by midnight or by 2 or some deadline, because it's illegal, supposedly, to hold people for more than 24 hours without any sort of legal counsel or anything. And it was, the court agreed and said, yes, everyone needs to be released, but then an appeal was filed, and the appeal was, what's the word on it? They didn't agree with the appeal, and they said, no, you have to get everyone out. But they gave them a slight extension to the next day at 5 o'clock, so that's Thursday at 5 o'clock. And everyone that was held after 5 o'clock, so that's 48 hours at this point, they were going to be fined $1,000 for everyone that was still held. So right at the very end, they started speeding it up. But as they were, when I got out, they were processing about one person for 15 minutes. And the day that I was arrested, they arrested 1,600 people. So if you can imagine how frustrating that, I mean, you're going from cell to cell, it's totally overcrowded, and there's no one's getting any sleep. I think that is about the story. Eventually the whole band got out. We were represented, there's the National Lawyers Guild was there, and they were offering free counsel for everyone, and don't know if it was them or exactly who, but there's several suits being filed, one against the Pier 57 conditions. Apparently it was asbestos on the floor that we were sleeping in. And then also, again, about the holding people longer than 24 hours without counsel. But that's pretty much what happened, and it seemed like the strategy was get everyone off the streets and hold them till the convention was over, which is what happened for my group anyway. The last person didn't get out until after Bush's speech on Thursday, and we went in on Tuesday.
Thank you, Sarah. Harry Archer will respond to this.
It's not really, I don't know what it is other than I'd like to thank Sari, and I appreciate the people that were there protesting. And just, I guess, briefly for now, say why I feel it was important for protests to occur at this convention. And that is, in my opinion, exploitation of the tragedy of 9/11. And a little bit of history, concisely, it was at that time that we formed, sort of ad hoc, a lot of us in the Winter community at that time got together and formed what we call the Peace Committee. And it was our hope, and there was a lot of sentiment at that time, that our country would respond in a peaceful manner. And it was a violent and terrible and tragic act of terrorism. but that our response would be measured and judicious, and that basically, you know, hopefully by taking a peaceful approach, it would, you know, to some extent alienate and ostracize Al-Qaeda and the terrorists. But of course, we know that didn't happen, and it has been used to justify a military and other agendas. And at this political convention, it was, you know, being further exploited as justification. And I think ever since 9/11, the administration has promoted a policy, or there's been a policy that it's unpatriotic to question, you know, what we're doing. It's a blank check. This has happened in the interest of your protection. You need to release your rights, you know, the Patriot Act, everything else, so that we can take care of you. And the way to counter that, of course, is awareness of the public. And that's, you know, what I saw as the purpose and focus, basically, of these demonstrations, to say, if nothing else, to say to people and get a message out, stop and think. Don't just, you know, go with this and say, you know, I trust you to handle it. But for us as citizens to assume responsibility and become informed of what is really going on, and not just stand by and watch another exploitation of this tragedy as a free license to do whatever. And again, thank you.
Can I say a couple things to what you said?
Yeah, just a minute, and then you'll be first. Thank you, Harry, and thank you, Sarah. Instead of asking questions or examining either of these two, if you would make statements where you come from on this, I think that would be proper. Yeah, go ahead.
Two things that I'd like to comment on. Number one, that if it weren't a peaceful protest, Bush could have legally and lawfully and properly declared martial war, and he would have won the election by default. So it had to be peaceful. Secondly, when you said something with respect to, I'm just going to paraphrase how I'm going to communicate what I'm talking about, that rather than just going with things or getting it onto someone's emotional bandwagon of what they think or perceive some legislation in it or whatever's going on, but check it out. And I strongly urge every Christian, especially believers in Christ, to check it all out. Not just the Democrats, but the Republicans also, both sides. I am not a registered voter, and I have not voted on a presidential election for the last two terms. And here's my reason. I do not feel like I am competent enough to vote. And when I feel that I am competent enough to vote, I will. But there's got to be some way to make me competent. Right now I don't really have the energy to really go out and search that out. But I think that we need to be informed on both sides, and not just on someone's emotional whim of what they might think it is, but I want to know, okay, you're in this emotional frenzy over whatever you believe about this, okay, fine. You can be that way, but you know what I want from you? I want to know where I can go in the law, in the legislature, in the law library, wherever, and get that law and take a look at it, and see what you're saying is right or wrong. And my experience with the law, which I've been studying for the last 6 years, my brother is a lawyer, and he's running for the Washington State Supreme Court justice. Okay, my experience is from the municipality, you know, municipal courts, district courts, superior courts, any kind of court, do not believe what anybody is saying. Go look at that law and see what it says, because what that law says and what someone else says it's saying are, can be totally different, and 9 times out of 10, it is, and it's a money racketeering bunch of garbage.
Great, thank you.
And I'll make a comment earlier. I'm from Seattle, and the WTO, World Trade Organization, was in our area, and one of the things that I, it was only 4 blocks down the hill from where the main meeting of a lot of people from all over the world meeting, and it ended up, with it only being about 4 blocks from my apartment building, and it ended up, the protesting was very, right out my apartment window. I think the one thing that I had trouble with is how a number of the way protesting was being done. I think that was my main observation. We in our Church Council of Greater Seattle, the Washington Association of Churches, worked at trying to make peaceful demonstration, similar to the band people, and they ended up and went through the permits and let them know that we surrounded the kingdom. We did a march to the federal building. The one thing that I observed was a controllability of a large amount of population, and there were many times there was no control. And what got me angry and went down and really joined part of their protesting was that when they were only 4 blocks from me, from my apartment, and they got within 2 blocks from my apartment, they were going to, basically, I was going to be in sort of what they were to call like the red zone. And I would have had to be in sort of like their red zone. And I didn't want to be that part of that part. And ended up, I protested too.
Yeah. Let's try to stay with stay closer to what we initially heard.
I'm happy to answer questions about my specific experience, but I just wanted to say that I'm not, you know, a career protester, and I might not be able to answer from that perspective, but I can just talk about my experience if I want to.
I just want to say that I thought it was so wonderful to know that so many people were there and it was peaceful. And we need more of that. And things are in the state that they are because we have become complacent. We haven't spoken out. We've let other people have their own agendas. And this is a result of that. And I also love Vespers tonight because I realize, you know, I'm trying to do my own type of protesting with this, and that I'm not doing it in the right way. I need to be more loving and truly peaceful way. So I need to, you know, learn those skills.
I just want to thank you for doing it, even though whatever reason it was, that you went like for your band and stuff, but you just taught me that I have courage, that I've been hiding that courage, wherever it may be. Sometimes I wonder, what am I doing at Holden right now? But I think I got the answer tonight. Thank you.
Yes.
I have a specific question, just out of curiosity. When you're in the warehouse, what kind of a feeling was it? Were people singing, gathering and singing? Were there people just scared? I mean, what kind of energy was there?
It was really across the board. There were separate pens, and I happened to be, and I was totally separate. I was only, of the 20 people I was in the pen with, only one other person from the band, and then I was separated from them, so I spent the majority of the time not with anyone that I knew. And I happened to be in a more subdued pen, and so that there was really almost nothing going on except just kind of a disbelief. Like when we first got, you know, my arresting officer was like, oh yeah, you'll be out tonight, this is, you know, but he was totally like, this is ridiculous, and we were kind of playing games to pass the time because we were both so bored, you know, and he was sure that we would be out. And so we went into the pen thinking that this was going to be, you know, and then hours and hours went by, and they, you know, at about 2 a.m, they stopped taking people for the night. And it was like, whoa, we're going to be here for a long time. And then it was just kind of, well, it was totally depressing and devastatingly boring to be in there. But there was another pen across the way that was chanting and singing, and actually my friend was in a pen where they actually had a meeting about the health conditions in there and, you know, and how to organize and stuff. But at some point along the way, it got to be, at least for my personality type, it was difficult to be in, because then later I would be put in, you know, you just got shuffled around all the time. It was difficult to end up in a cell with someone who was really bent on agitating, because that would alienate the police and your conditions would go down and no one could hear you except for the one policeman that was standing there going, whatever, you know, and so it just got to be like, can we just be quiet and sleep and just try to get through this? You know, whereas some people thought it really was helpful and important to be loud and aggressive, and some people were not as into that. So,
you said you have limited history here, but do you have any reflections on the role of music in this movement?
Absolutely. This band that I play with, they're so important to the protest movement. I feel so lucky that I get to just jump in. I also went to Cancun to the WTO last summer with them. And people like absolutely love this band, and they fight over where the band is going to go, to what action, because the music is so galvanizing. It's just, because protesting is a pretty boring thing. You know, there's really not a lot going on. You're just walking along, trying to stay motivated and hold your sign, and the chants are generally kind of disingenuous and old. And the music of this band is, well, there's varying moods, but sometimes it's, you know, just really energizing, and sometimes it's aggressive. If, you know, it gives the whole feeling, it gives an emotion and motivation and energy to the march. And so I felt like it was, that is the whole purpose of the band, is to lend energy to support the actions of protesters in these various actions. And I just think after, you know, and then when we got out of jail, we went and played at this church courtyard, and people just came from all over. It was the most cathartic experience ever. All these people, you know, hundreds of people had just gotten out of jail, all celebrating with the music. That's really great.
I don't know if this was something that was sensed by the people protesting or not, but I had my little GE Super Radio and I was trying to get some news on Sunday night, and I got some about the protest. It was just an overwhelming sense of, all right, you know, it's like someone is doing something, and those people and you were me, were my voice that, you know, wasn't heard by me in New York, but was through you and through all the people there. And that, I just think it was a very positive and important thing that happened.
I had a question just about your band. I didn't catch the name of it, and I was wondering how it was formed or funded or how it's organized, how you end up at these events.
It's called the Infernal Noise Brigade, and I'm going to put the CD.
I still didn't understand.
Infernal Noise Brigade.
Okay.
And I'll put the CD on when we're exiting. Folks want to hear it. It was initially organized for the WTO in Seattle when that convention was being planned. There was a group of friends that were like, we got to put something together for this. And then they stayed together and went to Prague and various, and now it's such a neat thing, the sort of, it's a world community. When we were in Cancun, you know, there's this huge Korean, you know, there's just people from all over the world, and now they're getting to know each other. And we, like when we were in New York, we worked with a French guy, you know, who we met in Cancun as one of our tactical people, and it's just such a neat, neat community. It's definitely the most global thing that I've been a part of, and it's really great to see the same people in city after city.
Did you pay for yourselves to travel?
I paid my own.
Decide as a whole what to do with all of that?
There, we put on a fundraiser, which covered, we each got a subway pass for the week, paid for by the band, but I paid for my own airfare there. And the band paid like $10 a day stipend for food. But it ended up being a much cheaper trip for all of us than we anticipated. We didn't spend any money for 3 days.
Bring them on board.
Yes,
sir. Sorry, I had a question. It sounded like you guys got kind of caught up in a more, you said, agitated version of the protest. Like you glommed on to another group. It was.
No,
okay,
no, I wouldn't say that. It was. The march that we joined in at the last second that led to the arrest, I wouldn't say they were agitators or at all aggressive. It was a party. There was music and people were like dancing and running down the street kind of thing. It was not at all aggressive or menacing feeling.
So it could have just as well been you guys doing exactly what they were doing.
Right.
And got the same poor treatment by the police.
Well, we were. It was us. I mean, there wasn't really any separation between us and them. It wasn't like.
Okay. So you were a part of that group, and.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we were like the tail end of the march.
Okay.
And it wasn't like they were doing something in the front that caused the whole group to be arrested. It was just by matter of fact that we were walking in the street, and it had been the plan from before, you know, from months before, that they were going to clear the streets of everyone that came to protest to keep them. I mean, I'm projecting, of course, but I mean, arresting 1,600 people in one day for ticketable offenses, you know, and putting them in jail for 3 days, the cause and effect of the action versus the, you know, it's just completely out of proportion. Being
okay.
In jail for 3 days for walking in the street. You know?
And with that in mind, I don't know if this applies then, if you have that, but would you have any advice for protesters that would help limit their exposure to police, or was this just an unthinkable situation?
I have no advice, because like I said, we had absolutely no, I mean, we discussed strategy about how none of us were willing to get arrested for the band or for the cause, you know. It was completely unreasonable the way, there were people that had nothing to do with the protest. There was a Polish woman in the cell with me that didn't speak any English and just had walked out of her door. Mm-hmm. There was a 16-year-old girl in there that was crying and her parents didn't know where she was. You know, it was just like, it was just corrupt, you know, and it, they didn't have to do this at our site, but at a different place where they were arresting people, what they do is, like I said, they pen in on both ends of the street and then they throw nets over the whole crowd and just, you know, bring everybody in no matter who you are.
And the last thing I would say is thank you, thank you for what you did.
I have a philosophical question, I think. The complex issues that we live with, do you think the complexity and the push and the pull of all these issues within this country and outside this country result in complex events like this? The crowds, even some of the demonstrators, either on a peaceful side, and some of the demonstrators on more aggressive, taking a more aggressive stance. Is there anything to that? Are we living in such a complex way that things are just going to get out of hand sometimes? It seems that thought through solutions or the presentation of issues gets so fuzzy that we end up with complex responses. Let's see, right here and then up to...
Yeah, the interviews that I had seen dealing with the preparation before the convention occurred, the police were already strategizing how to control any kind of activity that they saw as not legal or lawful according to their rules. And anytime you go against the rules, you're going to suffer the consequences. I'm not saying that you were wrong in what you were doing, but that's just the way it is. But they learned their tactics from previous demonstrations where anarchistic type people came in and destroyed property. And the police chief was very adamant about that. His police were trained not to allow that to happen. So it wasn't so much to try to stop the protest as it was to control. And I think when they felt everybody's getting out of hand, they knew exactly how to interrupt and divide you and move you out. And then make sure you couldn't get back on the street again until after Thursday night. I mean, that was their strategy. And that was public knowledge. And to go up against that, I think would be, is not, and think you're going to come out the winner is not going to work. And the reason that nobody knew that you had 750,000 protesters or whatever is that no bad things happened, so the media would not follow that. The police most likely even lessened the number, the estimate, you know, because they don't want to give in to the fact that it was a meaningful event. I think the idea of protesting today may be out of place because those people who are in positions of authority have learned how to control that. And we maybe have to find, if we're going to be peaceful people, I appreciate what you said, Harry, that we need to find the better way in order to get our protests across the people and get positive publicity and undermine the opposition, whatever that might be.
You say?
Well, it sounds to me, if I'm hearing the story correctly, that the police had no intention of permitting people, whether they were behaving lawfully or not, to be in any area that might be part of a voice of dissent to the convention, and that they were simply going to sweep up everybody who could be associated in any way with that voice and lock them up for the duration. So what we have here is police, you know, we have lawless police basically serving a political agenda. And if they were successful front, and so people aren't aware really of what's going on, that we have a kind of a new situation in this country where
protesting is illegal.
Yeah, where actually the powers are able to silence and disappear, all contrary to the king.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very emotional for me, you know, to hear what your experience was. And part of that is just being your mother. I don't want any harm to come to you. It just arouses the protective instinct that I have. On the other hand, it ignites my fears about the change in what we understand to be basic fundamental rights in this country. Right to assembly, right to free speech. You know, these are like core in our Bill of Rights as to what we say we send people out to fight for and to protect. And so the irony that the loss of the right to assembly, the loss of a free press, the loss of all of these mechanisms that are core to our spirit of democracy are the most terrifying thing to me. That in the guise of a reaction, and this is tied to what you were saying, to terrorism, we internally do more damage to the freedom of this country than any particular physical attack. And this just brings it home. It's like I can read about it and be afraid about it and see the media voice, an objective media voice, shrinking and shrinking. But it is tied to what was in their worship service tonight. It's one thing to not do evil, but it is also important to protest evil. And that taking action of whatever kind, reason, you know, is anyway, it just, it's very, very frightening in terms of what we are internally losing belief in this country and allowing all of these different mechanisms to continue to limit what we believe we stand for.
And I'm not sure, though, that we can say that we're losing freedom by what happens at an event like that, because that's a controlled, like gentleman mentioned, that's a controlled situation, and they're trying to monitor that. But we're here with a group of 30 people on bus from Iowa and Minnesota, and as I hear, many of you might want to have been on the street with you protesting and complaining about the government. I think many on the bus might have wished they were inside the event, cheering on the 4 years that they've seen good things happen. And I think that's an awareness that this camp needs to have, that there is half of America out there that is not on the same page. And that many of the issues that you raise as being important are not being raised in middle America and in the churches and in the schools and Bible camps there, and now that there's a drastic difference, and this message tonight talks about understanding, and what I saw in the protest was hate. I saw a lot of hate in the signage, especially, and there was a lot of it on. I watched C-SPAN for a long time, and there was a lot of, I wasn't here because there's not television here, but there was a lot of demonstration and a lot of hateful things that were in those protests and a lot of hateful language. And if those, you know, they might have been peaceful in action, but they were not peaceful in thought and word and deed. And so I think we just need to be aware that there is a half of America is thinking differently about many, many things, and not to close our minds about either part, but to be aware and seek understanding.
I have to say, I'd be much more inclined to believe personal experience than the media, particularly when we know how much it's manipulated to generate a certain kind of response, which is very much controlling the good number of the population. To go back to what Mark was saying about the WTO in Seattle, where the presentation throughout the nation was the breaking of windows and the violence, when in fact there was the most incredible number of seminars and educational events and wonderful things that were going on about the global economy and its hurt to the poorest of the poor. And none of that was ever presented.
But what I was saying is that you can't say that we're losing the freedom of speech just because of an event. When we can speak freely at many, many other occasions. But
when people try to get permit to speak and they are not allowed,
but they're not allowed the right to assembly. The event controls that more than unlawful speech.
That's the whole problem. That's the most important time we need freedom of speech is at that event.
Just a question, really. It's interesting to hear both of your presentations and thoughts on, let's call it the act and process of protest. It's, as an outside observer, who's not particularly been protesting in these forms, it's interesting that there almost seems to be a professional band of protesters, not unlike you, and I use band in both ways, that goes to Cancun, that goes to Seattle, that goes to New York, to protest GMO, World Trade Organization, even though World Trade is presenting both the third world as well as the first world. So there's a sense to the outside observer, it's protest for protest's sake, and hey, this is sort of fun, let's go protest. And perhaps regardless of topic, and I heard in most of this conversation, hey, this is the method of protest, the process of protest. But hey, let's just go protest against something, them, the system, whatever. I think that demeans protesting. That's where things come apart. The protest loses its power when it's not visibly making a point. Protest for protest's sake, that's what I'm saying, is, I think, no question.
Just a minute. Here, I'll go with someone that hasn't spoken here first, and then here.
I don't know your name, but I want to really thank you, Mark, thank you for bringing up the point. I think that in this village, it's often pretty hard to bring up the, if you want to call it the Republican side or the conservative side, it's a difficult thing to bring up. And your side is not the side that I agree with at all. And Diane, I really appreciate what you bring up. And I guess one of the things that I really, really long for is how do you talk across that chasm? It seems to be growing increasingly difficult to do that. My dad will vote Republican for his whole life. And we used to have these great arguments about it. But since George Bush got elected, it's been impossible to talk with my dad. And you talk about a lot of churches not saying things. I was trained as a pastor. And in this Lutheran tradition that we have, I was trained to understand that the great sin, really what sin is to divide things so strictly into good and evil that we can discount the other side. And that has been the political agenda of our president and his administration, vocally voiced ever since 9/11. And my dad is really fine with that. And I don't know how to talk to him anymore. So I'm really thankful you brought that up. And I'd really like to know what it is that makes the people on your bus feel good about this. What is it behind that? And Diane, what is it for you and for me that makes us so frightened in these times I really haven't been more frightened for the future of my kids than in these past years. And I don't understand why we can see things so differently. So, thank you for bringing it up. I would love for Holden Village to help me understand that.
That's good.
You read the Bible. There is so many wars that went on in the Bible. And I've read it a lot. And I found out that why we have wars is there are different kinds of wars. We need to fight for the evil wars, the people who want to kill just to kill. And I think we should go after those people who just want to kill people, or like the Iraq. And there are other different wars in the Bible that were good. Like God was on one war. He made the Jericho wall fall with the singing. So that's what I think. Oh, wars to fight the evil people. Like, just fight against evil.
Just in addition to first, if we look at it biblically, in Matthew 24, as we read about the rumors of war and the wars and the wars, if we see Iraq now, it's all the signs that Jesus is coming soon. And that's not what, there's no focus on that. You know, we focus on Bush, this, that. You know, carry this, that. But we forget, soon God will come. And it says in the Bible that all those things are going to be done. Then he comes back. I just wanted to bring up the biblical side of it. You know, and hey, the protesting, yes, I've protested before. So I understand. And I don't think it matters really what side you're on, just as long as you have the courage to do if that is what God had called you to do, to protest. And I think that's what I can do. Sarah.
Well, our discussion is wide-ranging, as the issue is. Quite a number of years ago, a lawyer, a lay person by the name of William Stringfellow, wrote a book, A Private and Public Faith, and that's what we are talking about. And good things that Holden Village does is to hold these two private and public faith issues in tension and or resolve. And that's, I think, where we should be as church people, to keep examining these issues that seem to be so immeasurable that we end up with almost some impassable places, and yet that's what we continue to work at. One more, you have the final sentence, final word, that is. Please, no sentence.
Yeah, well, it seems sort of paradoxical or ironic that we use unjust means to bring around a just ends. The way that we got into the Iraq War through George Bush's at least being lazy with the truth, with the weapons of mass destruction, and also with the connections between Al-Qaeda and Iraq, I think this is sort of the crux that a lot of people find themselves upon, is dealing with a president that has more or less fudged or lied his way into a war. We were brought into this war without really having good information as far as why we're going into it. And the other thing, then, in response to your comment, if we are at war with the people that really have not attacked us and really have no real reason for fighting them, how can that be a great way to bring in the kingdom of Jesus Christ? Are we being that, if we pride ourselves in being an instrument of bringing God's kingdom through this war?
We have to remember that
they took private and public faith is what we will continue to do. And one of the places that we do that is here at this village. And I hope that there are several hundred other places across the country. Thank you very much for this conversation.